Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Fall is quickly approaching, but there's still time to do some planting, nurturing, and growing before the snow flies. This hour, we'll start off with a conversation about fall planting, and then later in the hour, we will answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Aaron Style. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And DNR forester Mark Vitosh. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you both so much for being here. And Mark, let's start off with you, because this has been a year you always spend a lot of time planting trees. But following the derecho last year, I can imagine that this has been one of the most tree plantingest years of your life. What have you been up to?
Yeah, everybody wants to replant, and I've kind of been one to say it's okay to slow down a little bit and make sure we have a good plan before we go forward. I mean, we always want to get things in the ground. We always say the best time to plant was yesterday, and I understand that, but we need to harp on, you know, right tree, right place, right selection, getting the right plants. So, fall can be a decent time. One concern I'm starting to have is this word called drought. So we have a little concerns about, you know, things are dry. So if we are going to plant in the fall, it's going to be really important that we get good moisture management for those new trees that we plant, and even trees that we've probably planted over the last 2 to 3 years.
And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the one-year anniversary of the derecho and the development of the re-leafing plan for Cedar Rapids. And you are running, as in conjunction with some other people, a series of workshops for people in the Cedar Rapids area to learn about tree care, right?
Yeah, in August, actually August 30th, August 31st, and September 16th, there's in different parks within the Cedar Rapids area, there's going to be kind of a tree planting, tree care workshop. And we call it a series, but each program is going to be pretty much similar. But if folks want to come to all three, because we'll be in different locations, different parks, looking at different things, it's open to the public.
All right. And Mark, so if I'm thinking about planting a tree, tell me what I should be considering right now, this time of year.
Well, for planting trees, basically the ideal time is probably mid-August to mid-October, when the soil temperatures are still up before they get too cool. And actually, if we're going to be planting conifers, the best time is probably, if we're going to be doing fall planting, is mid-August to mid-September before those soil temperatures start to drop. And we talk about this all the time, Charity. I mean, again, it's really important to evaluate our site to make sure that we're selecting the right species that's adaptive to those conditions, and located in the right place, and then go out and try to find those trees, which, again, this time of year or this year, because of the derecho and other things, it could be difficult to obtain those. That's why I tend to indicate that if you have to wait till next spring, that's okay. I'm a big spring planter, but I think the fall is also an opportunity to get some of those trees in the ground.
All right. And if you are going to be planting trees, you mentioned being very concerned about how dry it is, and it is dry. So would you recommend only planting trees in a place where it's going to be pretty easy to water them?
Obviously, that's a great comment. Is you got to make sure that you're going to have access. And I guess the other thing to think about in your community or your area, kind of look ahead to see if they're going to be conserving moisture. If they're going to limit how much water you can use and those kind of things, that would tend to push you towards spring. If that's not going to be a limitation, then like you said, if you're going to have to be carrying water, because you got to remember on these, in most cases, when we're planting in the fall, especially with trees, we're going to be planting container grown, potted, or what we call bald and burlap. We're generally not going to be planting bare root. If we're going to be planting bare root, it's going to be mostly the deciduous trees, and those aren't going to be available until probably late October, early November. So if we're going to be planting, we're going to be planting potted, and those, and a lot of those trees, the potted, the bald and burlap, they're going to need water probably every 2 to 3 days. So if you don't have access to that, you're right, you may be better off to wait or get a system which you can make sure that you get water. And when you're watering those, we're really going to focus the water on those balls, on that root ball that you just planted. We don't need to get water outside that area. We need to make sure that we're kind of treating it like it is in the nursery. We're saturating that ball and then giving a little bit of time to dry out, but then we're keeping that ball moist.
How about transplanting this time of year?
I think in most cases we're better to transplant. The thing is, if we're digging up roots this time of year, we always, or anytime we're transplanting, we're going to have root loss. So for trees in general to transplant, we're better to do it during the dormant season. So if we're going to transplant stuff, we're actually better, unless we have a very large tree spade, we're better to do it very late fall, or in most cases, if you're going to be digging up, let's say, a little seedling in the yard or something like that, I think you're better to protect that tree during the winter and then actually dig it up in the spring while it's still dormant and then move it.
All right. And of course,
because we tend to lose a lot of root system when we dig those up, and that's just an added shock. If we're planting potted or bald and burlap, that plant's already been through that, so they're going to be more adaptable.
And, of course, people can follow up with their specific questions about what they may be trying to transplant this time of year later on in the hour. You can call 866-780-9100. And, Aaron, let's talk about some of the other plants in our landscape. I know this is a time of year where a lot of us start thinking about dividing perennials. Tell me what kinds of perennials we should be thinking about dividing this time of year.
Well, typically, it's the perennials that are pretty hardy or easy to deal with, things that tend to do well when moved or divided this time of year. Perennial-wise are daylilies, phlox, peony, some ornamental grasses, and oriental poppies. I also, you know, Mark mentioned this too, I also find that transplanting or dividing is often easier because there's less leaf material and a little bit better to do in spring. But if you're trying to get ahead on your schedule, or if you know you have a project coming up, now is a good time to divide or move some of those perennials.
All right. Well, I think people get a little bit impatient to do it this time of year as well. There some perennials that we absolutely should not move this time of year? Or transplant and divide.
Or transplant, yeah. So, you know, you'll see, you can plant most perennials this time of year. You know, if you find a good deal at a garden center, and it's because it's late in the season, many of those can be planted. The earlier the better, anytime from about now until maybe the first part of October, you'll be pretty successful, provided you do all the watering and all of those things, just like Mark talked about with trees. But there are some perennials, especially those that heave really easily in the winter. So the freeze-thaw of that very top layer of soil can sometimes work root systems and crowns up out of the ground, especially of plants that have just been planted and haven't had time to establish really well. And certain perennials are more prone to this. Things like corybels and chrysanthemum are really prone to this. And so planting them in the fall doesn't work as well. And you'll notice that chrysanthemum was on my list. And many of you, I just saw chrysanthemums in the stores earlier this week. They're out there. Those mums are annuals.
I think a lot of people have a hard time accepting this. So say it one more time,
and I understand
Aaron.
It. the mums you're buying in the store right now are best treated as annuals. And we have lots of perennial plants we treat like annuals. Marigolds and petunias, if it were warm enough year round, would live year round. But we don't care about losing those to the winter. Mums planted this time of year, many of the varieties that you find in the stores this time of year just don't overwinter for us. And so save yourself the heartache, treat it like an annual, enjoy it this fall, and do something different for the spring.
Well, and of course, the nurseries, the flower producers, they have worked hard to make these mums beautiful for the next few weeks, right?
Exactly. And they are wonderful additions to the yard this time of year. They're just not perennial additions to the yard this time of year.
All right. Well, we're also getting close to bulb planting season for a lot of bulbs. What should we be thinking about there?
So October, a little later in the season, is better for bulbs. October is the ideal time to be planting tulips, daffodils, and other spring flowering bulbs. But now is a great time to be perusing those catalogs. In fact, many folks, if you haven't ordered some already, the hard-to-find stuff or the limited quantity stuff may already be gone. But get online. Bulbs in particular are the perfect thing to buy from a mail order retailer because bulbs mail so easily. And so you can get online now, find what you want. If you get them, wait until about October. You could plant them a little bit earlier, but October is the best time. And if you get them later, you can plant bulbs all the way up until the ground freezes with success.
All right. And if you do divide perennials, not mums or coral bells, water is a pretty big thing to be thinking about right now.
Yep.
With those too.
Making sure they stay well watered. Just like Mark mentioned, making sure that original root ball is staying well hydrated is particularly important. And you may have to check on it on a pretty regular basis to ensure that that happens. And you're going to do that for all the things you plant this time of year until the ground freezes. So making sure that, you know, once we get into late October, early November, it may take longer for that root ball to dry out. But if it does dry out, even that late in the season, make sure you water it.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I've got Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist, and DNR forester Mark Vitosh here with me today. They are ready and willing to answer your questions about plants and trees. Give us a call, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Mark Vitosh, DNR forester, and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bob is on the line in Carlisle. Hi, Bob.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
A question regarding the product Mike, M-Y-K-E, supposed to be a good material to use for transplanting. Is this safe to use on all type of shrubs and trees when you're transplanting, or are there some types you shouldn't use at all?
Mark?
I didn't hear what tree that he mentioned.
Bob?
Well, it's Mike. I don't think, the shrub I would like to maybe use on, I need to transplant a crepe myrtle that isn't doing too well. It's in an area that's too shaded, and I want to move it in the spring. And understand that Mike might be a good product to use to help get the roots reestablished in its new location.
Actually, I'm going to let Aaron take
All
that
right,
one,
Aaron, go
Charity,
for it.
on the crepe myrtle.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Mike is a product that contains mycorrhiza. These are fungi that are beneficial for trees. They work kind of symbiotically with trees. They have shown to help improve absorption with the roots, absorption of water and nutrients with the roots, and lots of other benefits. So applying this with trees or evergreens should, you know, I can't tell you how effective this particular product is, but certainly there's been a lot of research around mycorrhiza and using products like Mike that have these mycorrhiza in them to encourage better root development and overall better health for the plant. So there certainly is no problem with using it. I can't tell you how, you know, I doubt it's going to be like super magical in terms of how well it works, but it certainly could be helpful, especially for something like crepe myrtle. And crepe myrtle would be a plant that if I didn't have to move it in the fall, that would be one I would wait until spring. Crepe myrtle is barely hardy and only hardy root hardy this far north. And so if I didn't have to move it, if I didn't have to plant it in the fall, I would wait until spring for that one. And you could use Mike in the spring too.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Carol in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi, I have a transplanted offshoot of a lilac tree that I got from a friend in Springfield. I planted it in a too shady area, then I planted it in a sunny area, but then I listened to you guys and the little shrub, which isn't doing anything, it's green and healthy, but it doesn't grow. It's 50 feet from the trunk of my walnut tree and 35 feet from the canopy of my walnut tree. Do you think I need to move it further away?
Aaron?
Well, I'll take a stab at that, and Aaron can chime in. There's a lot of, I'll say, misunderstanding about jugulone and walnuts. It can impact especially tomatoes and other plants like that, and it's really variable on what it can impact. It can come from the root system. It can come from the leaves. But I would say if you're outside the drip line that and it's getting full sun, there could be other issues with the soil and stuff like that. I still think it has a good chance in that location, unless Aaron knows specifically that lilac is one that has some issues with that.
Yeah, so there aren't a lot of really great studies showing which plants in our landscapes are most impacted by jugulone, but there is a lot of what I'll call observational data from folks. Certainly things like tomatoes and peppers are often on the list of plants that are particularly sensitive to jugulone. Lilacs, peonies, rhododendrons, and azaleas are also on that list. Now, if you're outside of the drip line of the tree, that tends to be kind of the line that we draw in terms of plants being impacted by jugulone. And so it's already been moved once or twice. If it's in full sun, if it's outside the drip line, I would leave it in place. And if you're noticing that the plant is not as vigorous as you expect it to be, or if you're seeing yellowing of leaves and those kinds of things, then I would move it after noticing that, not right now.
Okay, that's wonderful news. It looks healthy. It's just really puny. It's a little pygmy.
And it will take a while for it to rebloom.
It's been through quite a bit of transplanting. So, protecting it and watering it and stuff, not a lot of extra fertilizer, but just good watering management, I think, and give it a chance. I think you can see what happens.
All right. Good luck with that, Carol. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Bob is on the line in Bettendorf, and I know this question is for you, Mark. So, Bob, what's your question?
Hey, Mark. Yeah, this is Bob in Bettendorf. I had asked you a question some time back about that bamboo pole that you get sometimes when you buy a tree at the nursery. You gave me a fine answer, but I've been asked the same question about five times since. So I thought maybe if I got it on Hort Friday, I'd get asked it a little bit less in the future. Thank you.
All right. So what do you do with the bamboo stake that you get?
pull it right away, or do you leave it there for a while?
Leave it and leave it staked around the tree, or leave it as a stake. I would initially, when you first plant it, to give that tree a little support, but a lot of times they're attached by these kind of green straps, and you don't want to leave them on there too long. So generally, if you're planting a new tree and it's stable, I would actually cut that off. If that tree seems like it's not going to be very stable, I would use that bamboo stake for a little bit and then work to get it off. And then if you still think that tree is not going to be stable, then stake it like we normally do with either T-post or others, you know, some other types of stakes, and use some nice cloth strap or nylon around the tree and then tie into that to stake that tree. But you don't want to stake it too tight. But in general, I think we leave those bamboo stakes on too long and the straps, and that can cause issues later on. I think that's probably what he's trying to get at.
All right, Bob. Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And we have a lot of email questions as well, so let's get to a few of those. This one's from Karen in Des Moines. My lawn has been getting rust in the past few years. I'll be overseeding the lawn and filling in bare patches with new seed this fall. Is there a type of grass that's more resistant to rust? The lawn is mostly sunny and currently has bluegrass and rye. Would a fine fescue be better against rust? Is it worth it to buy the brand name seed rather than bulk seed? Aaron?
I think most of the cool season grasses are going to have or have the potential to get rust. And it's rust is really more about the environmental conditions than it is about the species of grass. And so typically when we see issues with rust, it happens when conditions are dry and when fertility is a little bit lower. So, often we just recommend that you water and maybe work to increase fertility, and fall is a good time to apply fertilizers. And I know next week we're going to be talking a lot more about lawn care this time of year. And certainly, fertilizer is one of the things you can do.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ted from New Providence is on the line with a question for you, Mark. Hi, Ted.
Hi. I have some mature walnut trees shading the yard that were damaged by the derecho. In 5 or 10 years, they need to come out. What can I plant now that will withstand that toxic thing that walnuts give off?
The big thing, Ted, is going to be you're going to have some space where you get some sunlight for these new trees to grow. But some of the oaks actually generally aren't on the list of having big issues. We plant a lot of oak and walnut in plantations, and oaks, a number of oaks, tend to mix pretty well with walnuts.
Okay.
I would look at species like red oak, white oak, chinkapin oak. The thing is, they don't tend to be super shade tolerant. So hopefully you've got spots where you can locate them where they're going to get, you know, at least 5 to 6 hours of sunlight a day.
All right. Yeah. And Aaron, what did you want to add?
I was going to say the other species that I've seen on the quote unquote jug loan tolerant list, which is a little subjective, but are things like most maples except silver maple, and trees like honey locust and sycamore. They're also often on that list. I would definitely avoid linden, and I would avoid silver maple, and I would avoid most evergreens. They don't tend to do as well, both because of the shade and because of the jug loam.
All right, Ted, thanks a lot for your call. Sharon is up next. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, thank you for having me on. Near my home, they did a huge bulldozing of a lot of big trees. They tore them down. And now our whole neighborhood has been inundated with these swarms of little tiny, they're not mosquitoes, they're smaller than a mosquito, and they're in swarms, and they come in the house, they can get through the screen. Someone said they might be termites looking for a new home. I just wanted to verify that that might be what we have.
All right. Which one of you wants to tackle that?
Well, I'll start. What I would suggest, Sharon, is that you try to catch some in a small vial. And if they seem soft body, put a little bit of hand sanitizer in there. And then go to Iowa State University Plant Diagnostic Clinic and see how you can send in an insect sample and try to get it identified. I think that's the key, is trying to go through Iowa State to get that identified and then go from there.
All right.
Okay, all right. I've never seen anything like it, so it's not. Is it a possibility that that's what it might be, or you just don't want to say unless we have someone look at them?
Well, again, there are so many. I've been doing this a long time. There's all kinds of insects out there. And, again, there's different insects that look similar and stuff. And without knowing what it is, I think the key is it could be a lot. Could it be termites? Maybe. I don't know. But there's a lot of other things it could be, too. Because it just because of timing, it may seem like it's because of the bulldozing, but there could be something in the ag field nearby, or there could be something else that's providing insects. So that's where I think the identification before you figure out what to do is pretty important.
All right, Sharon, thanks so much for your call, and I hope you get that figured out. Let's go next to Carrie in Columbus Junction. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, yeah. I have a question about apple trees. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. I've been planting apple trees on my farm in southeast Iowa for 20 years, and I have yet to get one that would get to where it would raise apples. They all die on me. What am I doing wrong?
Well, that sounds incredibly frustrating, and I'm not sure which one of you wants to tackle that one either.
I'll let Aaron start, and I'll chime in if I need to.
So in general, getting a crop of apples from a home apple tree is a lot of work. Most of the varieties of apples that we eat have an extensive list of both disease and insect issues that often really reduce or almost eliminate a crop of apples if not managed. And the management starts before leaves even come out in the spring and can continue for much of the growing season if you want a high quality apple from home. So there are a lot of issues. The big ones that are likely to be most impactful in your situation are things like black spot, which causes extensive defoliation on the leaves. Cedar apple rust can do the same. And so these diseases, if not managed, can really stress out and reduce fruit set quite a bit. The best way to approach this is to find apple varieties that are naturally more resistant, in particular to the diseases. None of the apple varieties are resistant to some of the insect pests, but it sounds like you're not even getting apples that can get impacted by insects right now. So the first step is going to be...
I can't keep the trees alive.
Yeah. So the other thing to keep in mind are that apples do need full sun. They need well-drained soils. So if you have heavy soils, or if this is an area where water tends to sit, even if you don't see it sitting on the surface, it's very possible that the soils are just continuously just a little too wet for these trees to do well. Making sure that you start with high quality transplants will go a long way. Many apples are grafted, nearly all of them actually are grafted onto different rootstocks. And so making sure that you have a rootstock that fits nicely the soil conditions that you have can go a long way too. And then all of the same stuff that we've talked about with tree care in terms of making sure that you water when dry after establishing and all of those things will be important as well. Tree fruits like apples are a lot of work, but when you do get apples from them, they're very nice. So I would start with looking at your environmental conditions, making sure that you have full sun, making sure that you have soils that are well suited for these trees, and making sure that you're starting with trees that are more resistant to a lot of the common diseases, varieties that are more resistant.
Mark, anything to add quickly?
Yeah, you might want to dig a hole about a foot deep in some of the areas that you've been trying to plant and pour a gallon of water in those. And those should drain within an hour or two. And if that water's sitting there for hours and hours or even a day, then you obviously have some internal drainage issues, and it may not be the best site. Or take that soil in your hand, and if you can really beat it like you're making a clay pot, then it's really heavy. If it's sand, if it's clay, then you're concerned about the moisture, as Aaron said, and the drainage. But if it's really sandy, like a sandbox, then it may be just too dry. So you're hoping for something in between where you can take that soil and kind of crumble and not really ribbon. So as Aaron said, I think it's really important to look at that soil, because in general, if you're not establishing trees, especially in the first couple years, there could be something going on with that soil. And two, sometimes they may grow for a couple years, and if you have an extreme condition, like too much water and it's a heavier soil, it can cause a stark decline. So I think taking a closer look at those soils would be the biggest.
All right. Good luck, Carrie. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Stile. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Can we heal the environment? In Kansas, we're working on it. Up From Dust is a podcast about how humans reshaped the world to fit urban landscapes and agricultural needs. We'll meet the people who are rolling up their sleeves to find more sustainable ways forward. Listen to Up From Dust from KCUR, part of the NPR network.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And let's do some email questions here. The email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. From Lisa in Iowa City, it looks like my lilac bush might have blight. The leaves are all turning brown except for a few. The base is very crowded with shoots. Not sure how to save the bush. I know it's not recommended to prune more than about a third of the bush a year, but should I try to prune out all the brown stuff and leave the few green parts? Is it salvageable? And Aaron, I know we talked about this last week too. A lot of people are seeing this kind of thing with their lilac bushes. Remind us of what's going on.
Yeah, this has been an issue this summer across the state. There are a couple of foliar fungal diseases that are causing early leaf drop, and for established lilacs, it's not a big issue. Those branches are still alive. They still have green buds, and there's no need to do any kind of pruning or anything like that. Do a good job of fall cleanup and hope for better environmental conditions next year.
All right.
We had some of this last year, too. I actually have a lilac mm-hmm. in my backyard, Charity, that actually succumbed to this last year, and it's succumbing again this year. But those buds are nice and green. So all you can do is just kind of hang in there.
All right. Better luck next year, hopefully.
Hopefully.
All right. Here's a question from Tom in Cedar Rapids. My yard has been devastated by weeds this year. Many kinds, but the worst is Canadian thistle. Someone on social media said the derecho is to blame. That makes sense to me, he says. We even had a corn stalk growing. Is there a fall application I can try to get rid of all of this? I'm tired of digging. Aaron?
Yeah. If you're working in your lawn, fall is the best time to use a broadleaf herbicide. And it should contain an active ingredient like 2,4-D, triclopyr, dicamba, MCPP, some of those. And often the best broadleaf herbicides for the lawn setting to use for weed control are going to be a mix of a couple of those different active ingredients. You can apply these herbicides anytime from about September through mid-October. That tends to be a good time frame for that herbicide for in the lawn. Now, if you're working in a garden setting, it's a completely different story. You cannot use those herbicides. Hand digging is about your best option in a garden setting.
All right, even if you're tired of it.
Charity, I'll throw in too, it's really important to read those labels, because sometimes it'll tell you not to use at certain temperatures because those chemicals can volatilize and cause impacts to trees and other broadleaves that you don't want to target. Or they may even tell you not to use within the drip line of certain plants and stuff too. So it's really important to read those labels before you use those chemicals too.
All right. And here's a question from Sam. I've planted a number of hard maple tree seeds that fell off my existing tree this year. Each is thriving in a pot. I did this last year as well. And then each seedling died during the winter. I left them outside in heavily mulched pots. How do I manage these this winter to ensure their survival? Mark?
Well, I think if they're growing well in those pots, it's really important that if they're going to keep them in the pots, that they kind of heal them in well with good mulch and stuff so those pots are insulated. What can happen sometimes if those pots are above ground, they can actually freeze. So I would actually put the pots in the ground and kind of cover that up and put good mulch over the top, and then put some type of protection or cage or something like that so the rabbits and mice don't get to them. But I think the key is to get them in contact with the soil, even if you're keeping them in the pots, and then kind of cover them up so they stay good and insulated through the wintertime. Would you agree, Aaron?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the other thing I would add is when we do that, sometimes we forget to water. And so especially late in the season or first thing in the spring, don't forget to water. That little pot is going to dry out faster than the surrounding soil. And so you'll want to make sure that you water.
All right. Speaking of potted plants, Bryce says, I bought a hydrangea in a pot this spring. Will it survive the winter in the pot, or should I plant it in the ground? And if so, when?
You can plant it now, or you can do what we just described if you don't have the spot where you want to put it and you want to wait until spring.
All right, and let's go back to the phones. We've got Luann on the line in Johnston. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Charity. So good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to hear from you. What's your question today?
Our granddaughter's vegetable garden she has Asian beetles that are eating up all her vegetables, especially her basil.
So what can she do about those?
Yeah.
I don't think you'll
any way to get rid of them.
Right. I don't think you'll like the answer very much, Luann, but Aaron?
What were they eating in particular?
Basil.
Basil. Okay. Yeah. So it's likely Japanese beetle if they're kind of a large emerald green beetle, and there's lots of them. We should be getting really close to the end of emergence for Japanese beetle. They tend to be a real problem mid-summer into a little bit of August, although we have noticed them emerging later this year for some reason. But their emergence should end soon, and they will eventually go away for the rest of the season. Of course, they've laid their eggs and their grubs are in the ground and that whole thing, and Donald Lewis has talked extensively about Japanese beetles in the past, but often we don't recommend utilizing an insecticide, especially on edible plants, and especially something like basil. Usually the best way to approach Japanese beetle on something like basil or other edible plants is to go out first thing in the morning and hand pick. And a lot of times the easiest way to do this is to put a container, maybe with a little bit of soapy water in it, right underneath the leaves. They tend to cluster together on leaves and plants, and they're more sluggish in the morning. If you tap the plant, one of their first responses is to drop down to the ground, and if your bucket's underneath, you can catch them that way, and then you can drown them and bury them in your garden somewhere. That's usually the best way to approach it. This is a lot of work, but if you can keep populations down, one of the things we've noticed is that Japanese beetles like to party. And what I mean by that is where there's Japanese beetles, there are more Japanese beetles. They like each other. And so if you can keep populations relatively low, you can reduce a lot of the damage. Even if you don't get rid of every last one, they tend to come together. So if you can kind of focus your efforts on the plants that are important and keep the populations low on them, you can reduce damage that way too.
All right, Luann, thanks so much for your call. And of course, no one is suffering alone with Japanese beetles this time of year, but hopefully they disappear soon. Randy is on the line next in Pocahontas. Hi, Randy.
Hi. Just want to start out by saying that it's a tough year for gardens, and I got a question on some peppers that I'm growing.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. I've got a lot of peppers and stuff. I'm getting sun scald on some of my poblanos. But the question I have is our bell peppers this year. They're getting fairly good size to them, but they're not shiny like ones you would see in the store. They've got kind of a dull, they're good size, but they've got a dull finish to them, and they're not getting that shine. Could that be the heat, or what's causing that?
Aaron, what do you think?
It may be the heat, or, you know, if you're having sun scald on other peppers, it may be a similar kind of response to a little bit more intense light. It's most likely a variety thing. Some peppers are just going to be shinier than others because that's the quality of that particular variety. And it could just be something as simple as a fine layer of dirt that when you wash off, they become shinier. It's hard to know for sure without seeing them in person. But my guess is that it's not something I would be too concerned about. It's probably related to variety. And if it's not that, it's something with the environment. Maybe the sun is a little bit more intense or, they're just a little bit dirty.
All right. Catherine's up next in Fayette County. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep. What's your question?
Okay. We bought a farm, and I don't think anybody's lived in the house for over 15 years. And there's a huge, beautiful, we bought it last fall or last summer. So this beautiful lilac bush is literally growing right up against the house. And we're going to tear the house down. Is there any way to save the bush, or can we transplant it? I hate to lose it.
So you could transplant it. Spring would probably be the best time to do that. But if you're doing all this work on the house before that, you could do it this fall. The earlier in the fall you could do it, the better. You could also, depending on how you're removing the structure, if you didn't mind where it was at after the structure is gone, you could probably cut it off, get it out of the way, and leave it there. Lilacs, especially established ones, will come back from their root system fairly well. It'll be incredibly stressful. It might set back flowering for several years, but I wouldn't be surprised if it survived. Now, if you're in there digging a lot of stuff out and the root system comes with it, obviously that's not going to work. But I would if that's the case, I would transplant either right now in the spring. And keep in mind that you don't have to take the whole plant with you. If it's easier, especially, I'm imagining this is a fairly large plant, pick a few of the offshoots and move those, and the rest of it can be sacrificed. It would probably be a very large plant to move otherwise.
All right, Catherine, thanks for your call. And we've got a tree question for you, Mark, from Brian in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Brian.
Hello. Yes, so we were hit pretty hard with the derecho and lost a bunch of our favorite trees, but we have replanted a bunch of trees. And some of my trees have started to look very stressed. The leaves are drooping. Some of the leaves are starting to turn fall colors already. And I've been watering pretty regularly, and I'm having a hard time knowing what I need to be doing to make sure these trees survive. So one person told me, oh, it's easy, you just need to water more. Another person told me, if you water too much, then the soil can start to kind of be clay-like, and that can actually be worse for the tree. And it's like, okay, I don't know what to do to make sure these trees survive.
Great question, Brian. I get this quite a bit. So what I would try to do is, if you have a little probe that you can just dig a little bit in the balls of these actual trees and actually feel the ball and get your fingers down in there to see how moist they are. The other thing is understanding your soils. If there's a lot of clay in your soil, when you do water, you want to water just enough to get the ball. But I would get my fingers down in there, and if it's not very moist, I would try to continue to water probably every few days. But again, I want a slow watering, and I just want to water where I think the majority of that ball is. Kind of like if you had it next to the garage, you'd probably water it every other day, and you just water that in the pot. You kind of want to do the same thing. But if it seems pretty wet, then you're going to want to give it a little time to dry out. But you really want to get your fingers down in that ball, because fall color is the tree's kind of response to stress. But that stress could be too much water or it could be not enough. So getting your fingers in that ball, I think, will help you kind of see what the moisture's like in that root ball.
All right, Brian, thanks for your call. Mark in Urbandale is next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. You covered my lilac question, so thanks. But a question about dividing hostas.
Okay.
Got some that I want to do in the spring, or can I do them the fall too?
Aaron?
If you really need to, you can do it in the fall. I think the ideal time to divide and move hosta is first thing in the spring, when those little points come up out of the ground so you can see where the clump is, but there's not leaves everywhere and in the way. It's really easy to dig the plant out, divide it into pieces if you want, and move it at that time. It's usually kind of mid-April time frame when that happens. So if you can wait till spring, that would probably be preferred. If you need to do it in the fall, you could do it now. Hosta would take it.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for your call. And now we're going to dig into some email questions again. Here's a question from Mary in Des Moines. I've inherited my mother's years-old geranium plant. She always wintered it over. I know she dug it up from its outside spot and put it in her basement for the winter. It was fairly dark there. Could I put it into the garage, or would that be too cold? And how often would I water it?
So there are a couple of different ways you can overwinter a geranium. I find the easiest way to do it is to simply treat it like a houseplant indoors. I suspect that her mother was overwintering it kind of bare root. So this is where you basically overwinter the plant outside of soil, and those thick kind of fleshy stems remain plump and firm through the winter, and then you repot it early spring, get it to grow, and put it back outside. If you're going to treat it like a houseplant, which is probably what I would recommend at this point, find a nice sunny window and water it when it's needed throughout the winter months. It may even flower for you, depending on what variety it is and how much light it's getting, and you can enjoy it all winter, too.
All right. Here's a question for you, Mark. This is from Gwen in Manning. What is happening to sunburst locust this year? It's losing its leaves and has brown stems left on the branches that drop off. It looks sad. Thank you for your help.
Could be heat. Again, this time of year, I notice on a lot of trees, especially things like birch and cottonwood with the temperatures and everything and the heat, they're shedding those leaves. If it's not, it could be something else. There's not a lot of common problems. The other thing is, if we have a heavy population of mites, you may want to look at the underside of the leaflets. It'll cause kind of a yellow speckling and then kind of a haze color, which then can kind of turn brown. But if she turns those over, she should see the speckling, and she might even, with a hand lens, see the mites. The other thing I would do is I would scrape the shoots. If they're not green and they're brown, there could be some type of canker or something. And if that's something like that, then she'd want to take some pictures, contact the plant diagnostic clinic, and see if there's some type of canker issue.
All right. And from Carolyn in Cedar Rapids, should I be watering my mature trees during this dry time? And if so, how do I do that?
So that's a great question. And as we know, even with us, when we're thirsty, water helps. So any tree, extra watering would help. But most of our big trees in the landscape have been there for a long time. They've survived these conditions. And in general, they should be okay. If they have the moisture or water they can use and it's available and they want to help a little bit, I would use a soaker hose around the drip line, which is the edge of the branches.
Okay.
And just keep slowly moving that hose around the drip line.
All right.
And soak those areas.
We're out of time.
Give those roots a chance to absorb.
Mark Vitosh and Aaron Style, thank you so much. We'll be back with Hort Day next Friday.